here, and Don, thank you. Just so we don't have that hallway kind of noise. Sometimes it's hard enough to kind of hear. Okay, and so we are live, and our plan this morning then, and we have the governor's office here. There'll be no action, so we'll not take roll. All members are here, but we don't have to take roll. We're not voting on anything. Really appreciate all the folks who are here who have traveled to Cheyenne, and thank goodness we've had good weather this week to travel, and we'll have good weather hopefully going home. But we appreciate you being part of the process. So we won't take, but today is not a time where we take any public comment on any of these items. It is just simply being presented now to the legislature. Many of these items for our members is the first time we've seen these. And so members might ask questions of the governor's office, those kind of things for clarification. And as I stated earlier, then tomorrow we will begin the process of markup where we will approve, reject, modify these governor's requests, and then put our own legislative requests, those kind of things, into the budget. So, Mr. Co-Chair, I think we have Kerry Gray, Chief of Staff for the Governor, and Alex Keene in the Governor's office, then we'll just turn it over to you, and you can take us through these. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, we'd like to apologize for having the letters up here later than we'd anticipated. I thought we'd have them up last night. There were some last-minute changes, and thank you and your staff for accommodating us on that, and we apologize. We have 16 letters. Most of those letters, I think we can go through between Alex Keene and I, and we're going to start with the revenue letter. Alex will take the lead on that. Just like to say as a prelude that between these letters, all 16 letters, there's only a net change to the fiscal profile, the governor's fiscal profile, of $8.27 million. Many of the letters are corrective in nature or have other kinds of issues in them, and so we'll point those out as we go through. And I'd also like to let you know that we do have agency heads on some of these letters that require some subject matter expertise from the agency that they're here to talk if we need to have them answer questions. So, Alex.
Mr. Chairman, the first revenue is the governor's take on revenue at this point in time. The letter's broken down into three components. Table one walks you through where revenue was at the release of the October 2014 CREG and discussed sources of revenue at that point in time. The October CREG identified a shortfall of $4.4 million. At that point in time, there were reversions from bienniums preceding 13-14 that totaled $140.3 million. There was $21.3 million of SIPA available, and then they identified a difference between the spending policy amount and CREG projection of the PMTF of $86.6 million after subtracting the $60 million that would go into SIPA out of FY15 PMTF revenue. That identified $243.9 million of revenue in excess of the governor's recommendations at that time preceding his delivery of his supplemental budget. Table 2 walks you through the result of the governor's supplemental recommendation and letters as compared to the January 2015 CREG. So the January 15 CREG identified a shortfall of $222 million as compared to what had been appropriated through the 2014 budget bill. However, at that same time, there were $34.3 million of reversions from the 13-14 biennium, and the $21.3 million of SIPA remained. The governor's supplemental recommendations and letters in total, with including the 9.27 of new recommendations through these letters, is $166.9 million, leaving a total revenue shortfall of $333.2 million. That's slightly different than the LSO profile of the date of January 16th because of the additional governor's letters. Table 3 on the last page identifies revenue options to overcome the $333.2 million shortfall. Walking through, we bring back the $140.3 million of pre-13-14 reversions, the new $34.3 million, which is included in your LSO profile. The $86 million is reduced to $76.4 million as a result of Craig actions in the January forecast. Craig added additional projected revenue from the PMTF, which in turn reduces this available amount. There is a second year of spending policy amount from the PMTF, which under current Craig assumptions is $173.1 million. We continue to have the $21.3 million in SIPA that's profiled. The governor is now asking that the $40 million that you included in your 2014 budget bill be available for 15-16 expenditure instead of holding it for his recommendations for 17-18. So when you total up those revenue sources compared to the revenue shortfall or the expenditures, it leaves you with a $96.6 million balance.
Yeah. Members, and the only thing I would say that's not on there that we have talked about it on this committee is that $44 million, what I call the natural gas bump from the cold winter last year, I think is out there as well, is an excess of projections and will sweep to the LSRA in July. So I think that's another amount out there. Would we all agree on that?
Yes, we would agree. This was just the $140.3 million was the amount that was identified prior to the governor releasing his.
Don, I mean, are we in agreement on that? I'm going to write that on there then. I just want us to all. It's not an account. It's really excess revenue from Craig, really, on natural gas pricing. We had that tremendously cold snap, and boy, spike natural gas price. Don, what do you say on your amount? Is that the right amount, the 44?
Mr. Chairman, Don Richards, yes, it is 44, and I can give you the exact amount, but it's $44,050,000, and that money has not been swept. Money is fungible, so explaining exactly the source of those funds is subjective, but absolutely those funds are very similar to the 140, which is already on the governor's table.
Okay, thank you.
Now, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Stubbs.
And, Alex, just to follow on the $40 million that, change that was in the 2014 budget bill to go to SIPA, just the timing on when that would be recognized, is that anticipated to be realized in 2015? Or is that? I was just trying to remember how that worked.
Mr. Chairman, so that $40 million would be available as of July 1, 2015.
And, Mr. Chairman, just one more follow-up. So that would leave an additional $20 million at that time still flowing into SIPA, is that correct, if it's realized at that time?
Correct. And the other $20 million is already identified to go into the health facilities account.
There was 60, yeah, and we've so that would bring that account up to, I think, $60 million for those health facilities after that transfer, if that occurs then. Okay. Very good. Anything else on that information on Governor's Letter 1 on revenues? What I'd like to do, Gary, is move actually, and I think a lot of folks here in the audience are here for Governor's Letter 16. It's the last one. And I think one of my committee members sent me a note, Representative Greer, and I appreciate it. And so we're going to move that first. And it's the tribal health uncompensated care waiver. And so we're going to move that first. The only chairs worse than these chairs are the chairs out there, and we don't need to have you folks sit in those for the next hour waiting for that last letter. So we're going to move that up to the first one. So go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, so this is a letter that was actually this is a topic that has been under discussion for a couple of years, and particularly in front of the Select Committee on Tribal Relations. That committee actually wrote to the governor as a committee action and asked for this letter, and the governor supports tribal health uncompensated care waiver, which is actually a waiver that is applied through by the Department of Health. And what happens when, if that waiver is granted by the federal Medicaid folks, is that the costs for Indian health care provided on the reservation actually is 100% federally reimbursed. And so it's no general fund is believed that it's going to be expended, so it's believed to be a cost-neutral bill. I think the only question that's a little bit outstanding on that is the 4% administrative match. It's unclear if the state would have the obligation for the 4% administrative match out of general fund. If that is the case, the tribal councils and IHS have committed to reimburse the state. So you'll see the last line of the letter says that this request is subject to an agreement with the tribal business councils and IHS to reimburse the state for any state incurred administrative costs. The request does require a physician to administer this waiver with the Wind River Indian Reservation and the folks out there. So it's a recommendation that's cost neutral. I recommended to be $16.9 million in federal funds is the estimated annual cost, and so it's a five-year waiver, and we've only asked for 1 year, so it would be expected that this would come back again next year and for the following four.
Okay. Members, any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins?
Yes. Would this start in the current fiscal year, or would it wait till the next federal fiscal year, or do we know how that will align?
We would, there's a waiver process that would have, Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, so there's a waiver process, and that process would be implemented by the Department of Health. It's anticipated that that would take a couple of months, and so that it would probably start beginning in the state, at the beginning of the state's new fiscal year, around July 1st, and this $16.9 million is a 12-month number on the federal funds.
Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, just so I understand this, is this a complete pass-through to the Indian Health Services on the reservation? The Department of Health doesn't have to do any administration on this?
Go ahead.
And also, that person, that one position you need, would that be a state employee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I can answer some of those questions, but not all. We had this at the back so that Tom Forslund could be here for these questions. So that would be a state employee that we're asking for. That would be a federally reimbursed position, except for the potential for the 4% administrative match. It does require a reimbursement. There's a billing and reimbursement component to this. So it isn't just a block grant, for example, to the tribes. There is a reimbursable element of this.
Okay. Follow up? Go ahead.
That one position, that would be an estate a state employee that's reimbursed by the federal government to the state, but that state employee would be subject to all state benefits, state retirement, state medical, and so forth.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, that's correct. I think the way that works, generally speaking, is if you're in a federally funded position, that your benefits, with the exception of your retirement, and I'm not even sure on the retirement, are generally federally matched at the same rate of reimbursement. If you're a 50-50 state federally funded position, then your benefits and so forth are a 50-50 match, general fund, state, federal fund.
Last question on the follow-up, Mr. Chairman. If a state employee with this happens to be a member of one of the tribes, what would their default position be? Would they be a beneficiary of the Indian Health Service or a beneficiary of the state medical plan?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, this would be anticipated to be a person that would be hired within the Department of Health. Of course, that person could be a member of the the tribes or not. And so that they would get state insurance. They would get all the benefits of a state employee. They would just be a regular state employee. The benefits here in this waiver occur from using Indian health care services on the Wind River Indian Reservation. So I think that person would be eligible to use these services, but they'd have to travel. It's not for services that you would get at Cheyenne Medical Center or anywhere else. So this person would be a state employee, like any other state employee, and would have state health care benefits. And then if they actually utilized benefits on the Wind River Reservation that were offered by Indian Health Services, then they'd be subject to this reimbursable cost.
Thank you.
Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Carrie, in terms of the reimbursement, we put up the 16.9 to start with. At what point do we get reimbursed? Do we get reimbursed monthly? Do we get reimbursed yearly? Just in terms of thinking about the budget.
Mr. Chair, Representative Connolly, I actually don't know how that works. I don't know how the logistics of the federal funds flowing to the Department of Health works. I believe that it's not we reimburse, but I think the federal government gives us the money up front. But I'll have to get Director Forslund back to you on that.
Mr. Chair, follow-up, and this might be for Don or for you. I'm just curious, when we have a figure of $16.9 million and we're told that it's cost neutral, how does that get profiled?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, was that question directed at me?
Don, or you want to take that? Or?
Mr. Chairman, the Goldenrod does not include federal funds for DEQ or Medicaid or any other. So should the legislature approve this letter, it would not affect your Goldenrod bottom line.
Go ahead, Mr. Co-Chair.
What's the 4% again?
Mr. Chairman.
Administrative fee?
Administrative cost. There's an administrative 4% administrative match from the state on Medicaid. And it's not clear whether that applies in the case of the Indian health care waiver.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just follow up on
that.
Go ahead. That 4% goes to who? The State Department of Health, or is that taken by the feds?
Don, do you want to? I think we'll have to have it as an item in the health department budget, and it'll be a reimbursable. We'll fund it initially, is my understanding, with general fund dollars, be reimbursed to the tribal.
Mr. Chairman, the way that actually works is that for all Medicaid dollars, you have this 4% administrative, which comes out of general fund. That's out of the existing Department of Health general fund budget. They would come up with that out of their existing budget. The way that's presented here in this letter is the discussion has been is the Indian Health Services and the tribal councils have agreed that they would reimburse the state for any state-funded cost in this. So if it was whatever 4% is, if we had that kind of a match, then that would be reimbursed to us from the tribal councils and from the Indian Health Care Services.
Members, I'm just going to take a little leeway here, and we've got a lot of folks who've traveled from the reservation. I just want to give you an opportunity. Representative Larson, I want to recognize, worked hard on this issue and appreciate it. And sent me the note that we have some councilmen from the Northern Arapaho Tribe, right? And the names I have are Daryl O'Neill, Forrest Whiteman, and Rick Brand. And if any of you folks would like to just take a minute and address the committee, because then I don't know if you want to stay for the other 15 letters. Probably not. Well,
can I go with that?
So if anyone would like to address us here, this would be a great opportunity if you want to, and we'll just take a minute and do that. And really the process, just come on up, push that button, the mic, the light will light up, and just introduce yourself for the record to the committee. Put you on the spot, but I thought you'd come this far. Go ahead if you'd like.
Sure.
Push the button right there on that, and then go ahead.
Okay, my name is Daryl O'Neill. I'm a councilman. Just like to thank you for recognizing us today and supporting.
I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Richard Brannon. I've been a councilman for about 5 weeks. It seems like 5 years, but but the focus or the reason why we're down here and the reason why we're here basically is to save lives, is to extend the life expectancy of the population that we serve, to improve the life on the reservation. We have a very low life expectancy on the reservation. And what this funding will allow us to do is to create a comprehensive, integrated medical home for our service population. I was the chief executive officer for the Indian Health Service for about the last 6.5 years. And what I decided to do was to basically resign from my position, run for the business council, mainly to pursue health care issues for our tribal members. We have many people that die in their 20s and 30s, and we did some epidemiology studies, and it shows that if we intervene in people's lives, we can extend the lives of certain individuals if the indicators are that they're alcoholics. We can extend their life by at least 32 years if they have diagnosis of alcoholism, substance abuse. We can extend their lives 42 years. So what we're looking at is basically life and death issues. Now, working with the Indian Health Service, we were funded at 45%. Basically, what that means is we have what they call contract health services. It's called purchase referred care now. And what we do is we contract with outside providers to do medical procedures that the IHS doesn't have the capacity to do in-house. We are what they call a level one, which is loss of eyesight, loss of limb, or loss of life within 72 hours. If you don't meet that requirement, you do without. That's the bottom line. So we have people that are 40 years old that are walking around looking like they're 70. I mean, they have canes. You know, they need a lot of orthopedic procedures done, knee replacements, hips. But we've, worked with our local delegation. They have been very supportive. We've worked very diligently with them. Senator Larson is, as I saw him walk in our reception yesterday, I said, "You are my hero." I got to talk to Eli Bebout. He supports it. Kel Case. And our new representative, Ellen, also supports it. And we are just looking for a hand up, but it's really no cost to the state because we will reimburse the 4% administrative match. We can take that off either what's reimbursed or, figure out some mechanism to do that. In terms of the reimbursement, my assumption is we will get paid quarterly through the state of Wyoming, so we will provide the services beforehand. We will submit a bill, and I believe then the state will pay us. I'm hoping it'll work very good for us. But the issue is it's a five-year program, and what it's going to do is it's going to allow us to have the cash flow, the needed revenue, to grow our practice, to intervene in people's lives. We did a study and indicators, and a diabetic patient lives a lot longer, 70s, because their average number of visits per year are 37 visits. So their longevity is they're able to live quite a long time. And the reason being is they come in and they see providers. A nurse takes their blood pressure. They touch them. They support them, both emotionally, physically, and just helping them. But the study pointed out that if we have five interventions in a person's life, we can extend their lives by years, maybe by decades. But the key thing here is this funding will allow us to create a medical home model. Within the IHS, we created, we were accredited by the AAAHC, American Association of Ambulatory Care, Healthcare Systems, and we were designated as a certified patient medical home, patient-centered medical home. And basically what that entails is we created care teams, and you do a lot of preventive health, you do a lot of screening, depression, substance abuse. But what it is you integrate behavior health, optometry, primary care, and it's looking at the whole patient. You have a team of experts, multidisciplinary team, working with the patient, or also with, for instance, social services, child protection services, looking at the court systems. Basically, it's integrating, making the system work better for us, but also efficiency. But the major thing we're looking at in terms of the waiver is cost savings also. We are funded at a very low level, so the main thing is what we can do. All we can do is basically put a Band-Aid on it. If we get this funding, we will be able to implement very highly effective preventive health programs, which will save significantly compared to waiting until a person gets very sick and then spending $100,000 or $200,000 as opposed to maybe $5,000. So that's what we're looking at, a better life for the people we serve on the reservation, both Shoshone and Arapaho and other tribal members.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your comments. Members, are there any questions? Representative Moniz has a question here.
Thank you. I see this is a five-year waiver. At the end of the 5 years, then what?
Go ahead.
Okay. Richard. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, sir. What we are, when I was the CEO, we applied through the federal government. Basically, there's two ways to get increased appropriations from the federal government, and it all hinges on new square footage construction. And there's only two ways, either facility replacement or you do what you call a joint venture. The tribe enters in, or tribes enter into an agreement with the Indian Health Service for 20 years. Basically, they lease our building for a dollar a year. Well, what they do is they increase our funding by from 45% to 85%, which will almost double what we get in appropriated funding. And that will go on forever. This additional funding will allow us to get the necessary financial backing to get the financing, get the facility designed, developed, constructed. And what it will do is, for the Fort Worski Clinic, it will add another 117 positions, and they consider the average cost of one of those positions is $100,000. So in essence, what we're looking at is almost $17 million for 5 years. But if we build our clinic, that will give us almost $12 million every year. Currently, our budget for direct services, that's for providing services within the clinic, is $6.7 million. So that will at least allow us to double it forever. But with the five-year plan, that will give us the startup capital, the needed funding that we have to have in order to expand the services and make them more responsive and better for the clients that we take care of. So it's basically it's similar to a business where you have to have the cash flow to finance your growth, and this will allow us to do that. So.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, not a question, but actually an apology on behalf of the rest of the Appropriations Committee. But I really wanted to go to your reception last night and know how much effort you put into it.
Oh, sure.
But we, by the time we got out of our meetings, your thing was over.
Yeah. Well, the governor said close of business 5 o'clock.
Nobody wants to go play table games more than I do.
It was a long, I don't know, was it 7:45 or something?
Yes.
When we finally ended up, finished up here.
Yes.
So, thank you, Senator. Anything else? Any other? Well, we really appreciate your appearance here today, appreciate the effort to come down here to Cheyenne. Why we located the Capitol in the corner of the state, none of us know. But but I know it's not easy to get here. And so we appreciate you being here, and we appreciate your testimony today. So with that, we'll finish with 16 now. We'll just take, if you folks want to, I think we'll just take like a minute break. Folks probably don't want to sit here for the rest of this.
Yes.
You're certainly welcome, and we'll kind of transition back to letter number 2 now. Okay, so thank you.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we're back on Governor's Letter number 2.
Mr. Chairman, so Governor's Letter number 2 explores two issues that were mentioned in the governor's recommendation. The first is the cap on the permanent land fund holding account, and currently statute in the budget bill, it's $475 million. The governor's asking to increase that cap to $550 million. The second component of this letter deals with the external cost adjustment. The governor supports the Joint Education Committee's external cost adjustment, which goes across all of the funding model categories. This letter goes on to explain that after you account for the common school land income, you may not need the TIP back from the permanent land fund holding account into the school foundation program to remain at $100 million balance. If that is the case, there will be more money flowing down the page, which would, again, if the cap remains at $475 million, you would have more money spill into the corpus of the common school account and the permanent land fund.
Go ahead, Mr. Co-Chair.
So, in essence, you, by raising that, then you would not have the spillover into the common school permanent land fund.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Alex, so what I see, if we don't raise it and if we do the ECA and we kind of do everything we have projected out there right now, it'd probably tip a couple million is all. It's not going to be a big tip. Don, is that where we're at? Kind of you agree with that statement or correct me?
Mr. Chairman, that is what's profiled, $2 million, although this letter notes that we already have $53 million in undistributed gains, and if those are realized by June 30th, those would tip unless
those
you
would
raise the cap. Okay. So it becomes a $55 million issue then.
Right. Okay, thank you. Senator Perkins.
And just to clarify, I mean, the reason you hedged that was about if they're still there at the end of the year is because they could be offset by capital losses between then and now, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, that's correct.
Those are realized, and we've had that happen. I mean, one spring of one year, we had a $100 million loss. So let's just everybody do that deal, and we're cautiously, conservatively optimistic. Okay? Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Stubbs.
I'm just trying to remember, did we just increase the 475, or has that been?
That's been the number.
That's been the number, okay.
Everybody agree with that? And we tipped about 220 then last year, wasn't it? Just working off. Okay. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so now we're moving to Governor's Letter 3.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is actually a request by the Wyoming Supreme Court, and I think that Justice Burke was before you in December. The court had commissioned a study of assessing critical court security conditions in 8 counties. Those counties are listed in this letter. The needs for security range from just minor things like locks, moving where they do the entry to the building, and these are counties that just generally can't afford these kinds of expenditures. There's actually a match component, but that would There's actually, the cost is actually when you include labor greater than $1.27 million, but the counties are able to provide through their maintenance departments the labor necessary to make these corrections, and the change in the security by implementing these is dramatic, and so the court is very supportive of these, and the governor is supportive of the court's work.
Any questions? Representative Greer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just so I'm clear, when we say that excluding the labor costs, we're anticipating that the counties are going to pay for that labor cost, and are these counties, have they indicated they're on board with that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gurr, yes, that's the case. The court's been working with the different counties, these particular eight counties in this assessment, and they've walked through the exact recommendations, which I don't think the court provided to this committee in the interest of not exposing these courts to risk. But the courts in the counties themselves have indicated that they can take care of the labor portion of this.
Representative Connolly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Carrie, if I remember that report correctly from the Court Security Commission, there were ranges that were used in there that were kind of low, medium, and high in terms of the dollar figure. Could you tell me the 1.27 represents which one of those?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, I don't know. I'll have to go back and look at the report.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
So, Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, we looked at that. We did get a copy of that, and also I serve on the Court Security Commission, so we've worked on this in the interim. And I believe the 1.27 was the high number, I do believe. And also in checking, I asked Mr. Chairman, I'll just share this with the committee. I asked the Mr. Obermuller from the Wyoming County Commissioner Association to check with these counties to see if they're on board, and they were all. They all expressed an affirmative with the exception of Weston.
So, Carrie, so the way this is explained then, this 1.27 will really buy materials necessary for these upgrades, and the county's maintenance staffs will install and do the work.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Representative Nicholas.
What is the estimated value of the labor cost? Do we know what that is? I mean, in other words, what exactly is what will their contribution be? Is it, I guess, if it's time and effort, they're employees that they already have, and so it's no cost to them.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, that's correct. And I think that was the assumption, that it was just that they didn't have to ask for this additional cost. It wasn't put together in the form of a 50-50 match or anything like that. It was put together that these were the costs, and then the conversations occurred with the counties to make sure that they would be able to actually implement these kinds of corrections once the hardware and the materials were purchased. And I actually was unaware, as Senator Perkins just brought up, that Weston County was not on board, because I understood all counties were. So.
And, Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Don, can we make sure we have the medium and the low number for the same things?
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. We're on Governor's letter number 4, which is the Wyoming Grown program.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this is a program that gets implemented through Workforce Services, and the program itself is that Workforce Services would identify positions where we had Wyoming graduates who were working out of state and sort of form a exchange where those graduates could be connected to Wyoming jobs that would fit their skill set or education and actually work to encourage bringing those graduates back to Wyoming. So it could be somebody who had worked out of state maybe 10 years as a doctor in Montana, was looking to come back to Wyoming, and this is sort of a coordinated exchange that would be worked through Workforce Services. It's been implemented in some other states with a lot of success, and it's an appealing program, I think, to a lot of people in Wyoming who would like to have opportunities for their young adults or children to return to the state.
Okay, Representative Greer.
Mr. Chairman, on that one, I just had a question. I don't understand what of $10,000 is any amount to get something done within a department that large. They're not able to reallocate within that department to continue this program. Help me understand why that $10,000 is a number and how that makes a difference.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, I think it's almost a threefold equation. First off, there was a desire on the part of the governor to bring some attention and some real focal point to this particular program, which isn't a program that has been talked about by legislators and by people across from Wyoming, this ability to stay here. So it is, in fact, you know, a nominal dollar amount. There are costs to the program to set up the exchange, and this represents those costs. In addition to that, the Department of Workforce Services is a heavily federally funded department with lots of criteria about what it does. So it doesn't have despite its size, it isn't that large of a department as far as its federal fund and its flexibility with its federal fund. So could it maybe come up with this $10,000? I don't think that the governor actually even asked that question. He wanted to highlight the program, and it's a nominal cost that he wanted to use this opportunity to do that.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, so is this a one-time fund, or are we just going to try and lure people back for 1 year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, the program will be ongoing, but I think that there's some startup costs to get the connection going, and this would represent those startup costs. There's not going to be a new employee or a new, you know, it's a program that once set up is simple to administer. You just have to set up that exchange. And so, again, it's partially to highlight that, get it set up, and then to go ahead, and the idea would be that it would continue. It's not a one-time program, but it's not, but it's, we're not representing this an ongoing cost. Because most of this cost is startup costs.
Okay, go ahead.
This second time now you've mentioned an exchange, and I'm kind of lost as to exactly what you're talking about.
I don't know the exact logistics, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns. I don't know the exact logistics of how it is, too, but you have to connect the job seeker with the job opportunity, and so there's a programmatic way that you do that to open that up, to keep track of that and do that. I'm calling that an exchange. I don't think that's an official term.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. All right. Thank you. And now we're moving on to Governor's Letter 5, the Wyoming Veterans Memorial Park in Cody.
Mr. Chairman, the Veterans Park in Cody has received a lot of support from the legislature, and we note here that in 2007, 2009, and 2011, that the legislature has provided funds to the park, and those funds have been used to not only establish these memorials, but also to do some kind of basic piping and maintenance work to make the park beautiful. It's a very important park to the veterans of Wyoming. Lots of ceremonies occur there. And this year they identified that there's no women's memorial and asked for some funding to help establish that memorial in the park. The legislature and the governor have both been very supportive of veterans recognition kinds of programs and what we can do to make sure that we encourage and support the military. So the governor supports $200,000 for the establishment of a women's memorial in the Wyoming Veterans Memorial Park in Cody.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Kerry, has it been discussed anything concerning matching funds on something like that? Or is this a cost, the total cost that's estimated for the new memorial?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, this is the total cost. There's not been a discussion of matching funds.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. And Kerry, is there a draft plan or an outline of what the $200,000 consists of, what it's going to be used for, and a master plan of some sort, and with funding analysis?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I have not seen that. I would have to ask the Veterans Services Larry Bartleboard about that when he brought the proposal over. So I don't believe that we've seen an actual detail of this cost. It's representative of what this body and the legislature have given in the past for the other memorials. It's in line with that, but I don't think I've seen a detail.
Could you please request that so we can see what we're buying, essentially?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Senator Burns.
$300,000 is kind of salty, but I'm also kind of wondering why this has to be part of the supplemental budget. Why wouldn't this – I don't quite understand what the rush is and why this can't be part of the regular budget cycle.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns. I think that this project came up as part of the supplemental cycle. It's something that the governor has supported these kind of proposals and believes that the timing is right. I don't know that I would call it an emergency. I would say that there's just sort of an ongoing support that the governor has given for these kinds of programs, and when this arose, it seemed like an appropriate item to put in the supplemental budget.
Okay, we're moving on to Governor's Letter 6, Mineral Royalty Grant Program. This is a favorite of our committee. Had a little action last year on this.
Mr. Chairman, Governor's Letter Number 6 is requesting that you increase the mineral royalty grant program within the Office of State Lands by $3 million to restore it to its standard budget amount. Last year, Section 337 of the budget would have transferred $3 million from the mineral royalty grant program to the general fund, and the governor exercised his line item veto on that transfer.
So the money is still there. It's not asking for new money. You basically want it freed up. It's sitting out there. Don, would you agree? And then this really is asking for it to be restored back to that program.
Mr. Chairman, I would agree.
Okay. Well, it was a line item veto. I think the amendment was probably written in such a way that it couldn't be returned. I mean, it was well written on our part, I'd say. And so I think so we're going to have to deal with that one way or the other. And so that's another $3 million out there. That's so any other. Okay. So it's not profiled on the general fund. It's not profiled. Okay, very good. Representative Conley has a question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I'm not wholly following this yet. Is it that the governor vetoed, and if now the governor is saying, oops, and that his veto was wrong and he wants it restored?
Go ahead, Alex.
Mr. Chairman, in the actions taken by the Joint Appropriations Committee last session, they reduced the amount of money available in the mineral royalty grant program in the Office of State Lands budget for the program specific to mineral royalty grant. That money was initially going to be used for court security. In the process of Section 300s, that money was no longer going to be used for court security and instead was going to be transferred into the general fund.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Next is Governor's Letter 7. Clean Water Revolving Fund and Drinking Water State Revolving Loan Program.
Mr. Chairman, this letter essentially is asking for a reallocation of funding that was appropriated last year in the budget bill. The allocation in current law gets the program out of balance, which should be 80% federal funding, 20% state funds. This letter is asking to restore that proper allocation, and it actually brings money back to the general fund. These dollars are already profiled and help in balancing the budget.
Oh, they've already profiled. So, yeah. Don, you want to add anything to that maybe for?
Mr. Chairman, this was included in the governor's profile, but it was not included in his specific recommendations. We have followed the governor's profile, and it already is included in the goldenrod, but we did ask that the explanation be provided to the committee because it was not included in the December 1st submission.
So those parentheses around the general fund dollars, that's the amount, just shy of $1 million in that. Been profiled already. Okay. Any other questions, Representative Stubson?
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little confused. So I would expect on rebalancing that you may see a reduction in general fund and an increase in federal fund, but it looks like on this letter we're seeing decreases in both of them. So I'm just not following where the rebalancing is happening.
Alex, you want to?
I can attempt to explain this, but I think Office of State Lands could do a better job. My understanding was through the process of budget reductions that this agency had taken, this was one of the areas where they had identified they could take a general fund reduction. However, in the meantime, the programs had lost significant amounts of federal funding, and so the entire program was reduced significantly, and in those reductions, they didn't get the proper allocation between funding sources. And so the attempt here is to get the allocation corrected to where it needs to be for the 15-16 biennium for these two programs.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, so the decrease in federal funds reflects, I mean, there was a decrease in funding generally, and then we may see a greater proportionate share in the general fund dollars because it's balancing out that 80-20. Okay, got
perfect.
It.
Perfect, okay. Okay, any other questions? Okay, now we're on to Governor's Letter 8, Local Government Funding.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the governor remains a strong proponent of local governments and sees a continuing need. This letter recommends an additional $25 million to local government. It sets out the governor's recommendation with regard to how he believes it would be best distributed, 60% for operations, 40% for infrastructure, and that the flat distribution amount be decreased for the be increased for the biennium to 30 and 15. Attached to the letter is a breakout of how that would affect individual counties and towns if this $25 million were distributed as laid out in the governor's letter. In addition, the governor has asked for $6.4 million for solid waste cease and transfer program and $2.6 million, which is just an amount carried on the books from 1995 where $2.6 million was over-distributed to local governments and never corrected. And so it just seemed like an opportune time to correct that 1995 over-distribution to local governments.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Kerry, for the cease and transfer program, is that just authorization to take an additional 6.4 out of the savings account, or is that a general fund appropriation? I'm trying to remember from my budget review. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, that's a request for an additional $6.4 million to be placed in that account.
Okay. Okay, and so these are all profiled, right? None of these are new. Don, right? These are all on this 30, whatever it is, 33 million, 34 million on this page.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. There are three requests here. They're all on the goldenrod, and they were in the governor's December 1st profile, but without explanation.
Okay, and then so this 6.4, Representative Greer asked about, how much is currently in that fund? It's like 18 million in there still or something. This is kind of like that it's contingency. I mean, how much is in there? That's my question.
Mr. Chairman, I'll admit the municipal solid waste landfill remediation account has about $28 million in it, and you had a $17 million appropriation. I still don't know what these funds are being requested for, whether it is part of the replacement of the $17 million, another account. I can't tell.
Okay, so I want to clear that up for us.
Mr. Chairman, there are two separate accounts, the cease and transfer account, which is to help those landfills that or those communities that want to go ahead and close their landfills and then go ahead and combine with other landfills. This body set out a formula and for people to apply for those funds. I think only one community was able to qualify. It was there's a condition in the statute about the way you do accounting that small communities can't qualify under, and I think you're revisiting that this session, which is separate and apart from the landfill remediation account, which has a similar kind of a formula, but that's for lining and fixing landfills that are going to go on in the future. So they're two separate accounts, landfill remediation and cease and transfer.
So where is this 6.4 going?
Mr.
Cease
Chairman?
And transfer.
Did cease and transfer has $28 million in it now?
Mr. Chairman, no, that's the remediation account.
Okay.
I believe the cease and transfer funding amount started at $20.5 million, $14.9 million in grants, and $5.6 million in loans. I believe, based upon the explanation, that the request is to recover or put money back into that account to the extent there have been expenditures from those funds, not unlike the contingency or disaster recovery that you've described.
So it's on the 6.4 for the 14.9 in the grant portion or the 5.6 in the loan portion of the cease and transfer?
Mr. Chairman, may I ask you?
Representative Greer is kind of
I'd like to have Don correct me if I'm incorrect here, but what we did was basically a municipal solid waste fund. And then we've went in and authorized out of that fund certain limited amounts to go to the cease and transfer program. And so that's with this particular recommendation, we have to look at what we've authorized out of that full amount for cease and transfer, and then we would be putting more money into the fund and authorizing more to go to the cease and transfer. And furthermore, Carrie's absolutely right. We got that program up and running, but because of one of the accounting requirements, we only had one applicant qualify for it, and we are rectifying that. That bill's already went through the House, so we're going to see that program get some heavy use, hopefully, this next funding or next grant cycle.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubson, I think, was next, and then Mr. Kocher.
And Mr. Chairman, and maybe Representative Gurr can help me remember, but we also have that LUST funding mechanism, and my memory served that we had really, as profiled expenditures, it looked good until that LUST
exactly.
funding kicked in, and then that would start picking up the funding thereafter.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson's correct from the projections we were getting from DEQ. They were looking at, and this isn't entirely clear, but they were looking at the remediation program, which is going in and fixing the landfills that are leaking with the problems, not the closing component of it. And they've taken that out with the savings that we've had in place and taken out how much manpower there is in the time frame. And we'll coordinate with a bill that you'll see coming through regarding diversion of the LUST funds. But that's going to begin in 2019 with up in 2024, you'll look at about $7 million a year, which will be available to help long-term stabilization. The real issue that comes in on this is the fact that we saw a huge number of landfills that said maybe it's time to close and transfer. And I personally believe that we're going to need more funds for the cease and transfer program for it to be able to complete its appointed task.
And maybe less for remediation.
And Mr. Chairman, and that's the trade-off, is if you start to transfer the municipal solid waste and do a proper closure, your remediation costs in the long run should go down.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So am I correct here that you're asking for 6.4 in general fund?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burns.
On the bottom of the page here, you're talking about $2.6 million in severance tax distribution. So that was overpayment that was made to towns and counties?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, that's correct.
Was any effort ever made to recoup that money?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I don't know.
Normally I would sit there and say, okay, fine, write it off. But and Senator Kinski just walked in, too. Sheridan County got hammered because they received an overpayment of just under $1 million during the CBM thing a couple of years ago in relation to an underpayment to Johnson County, and Sheridan County had to pay that off.
Don, do you want to – maybe Don can just give us a quick update on this.
I mean, what's good for the goose here?
A little different deal, but go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, this was a result of the state treasurer making an incorrect payment to cities, towns, and counties in 1995. Once that payment was recognized, I know that State Treasurer Joe Meyer did look into the amounts that were overpaid by municipality and county. I've seen a number of spreadsheets, but the bottom line is the state's treasurer's office staff has never been able to identify exactly how much each community was overpaid. So they were reluctant to request those or intercept future distributions in an amount that was in dispute. As a result, we've been carrying that on the books as a negative balance in this account of about $2.6 million for the last 20 years.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Moniz.
If I could, a question for Don. Were all the counties overpaid or just a portion of the counties?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it is safe to say that all of the counties and all of the municipalities were overpaid. The amount of the distribution between those is in dispute.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Very good. Okay, now we're moving on to governor's letter. Was there another? It's 10 o'clock. Yeah, so we're going to have to reconvene on adjournment. Right, Mr. Co-Chair? That's what we've got planned, not noon, because we have House appropriations at noon for re-referrals. So on adjournment, are you guys going to work till wee hours again?